This is the Authentic Persuasion Show. Hey, everybody, welcome to another special guest series here on the Authentic Persuasion Show. My name again is Jason Cutter. So glad that you're here on this path, on this focus that I have for season 7 here on the podcast to talk to professional sales educators and really uncover what the future of sales is being taught from a higher education standpoint, which if this is the first episode you're tuning into the show, this is an amazing topic because I didn't even realize this until a few years ago that schools are teaching sales and they've been doing it for a long time. Like, it's crazy to think about it. That's happening. There's this whole ecosystem. There's all this research being done and people are being taught sales, which I didn't think was possible. And so on this season, I'm speaking with as many sales educators and people with experience in this field as I can. It's part of my mission to help fill the world with authentic persuaders and part of the mission of the show here to bring value to you, whether you're in sales, sales leadership, and now maybe in education programs and really helping you be more successful, potentially close more deals, make more money, do it in a way, obviously, that's authentic and of value to you and your customers. So this session today, what I've got for this three-part conversation we're going to have is I've got Mr. Greg Zippy. So he is from the Professional Selling Academy and is at BYU. So he has his program and then he's also teaching at BYU. Now, he came to BYU after 33 years of selling early stage commercial software as an individual contributor, sales manager, sales executive, 9 different companies, including some that people probably are familiar with, like Oracle and Adobe Systems. Since retiring in 2019, he's begun consulting and training others in research-based selling best practices through his Professional Selling Academy, which he founded, and then also as an adjunct professor of sales at BYU. Mr. Greg, welcome to the Authentic Persuasion Show.
Thank you. I've been looking forward to visiting with you, although when I hear an introduction like that, I'm not sure who we're talking about anymore.
So. It's you, and now you have to live up to it. And there's even more of a description and bio in the show notes if anyone wants to tune in and really put the pressure on you. But of course, you've had a long career, did amazing stuff in sales. And what I love about the very first time that we spoke, you're like, I didn't need to go to work, but you're went to the world of teaching as something, as a way to give back. Talk a little bit as we kick off this episode here on authenticity. What was that journey like where, you know, especially authenticity and sales, what was that like when you started in sales quite some time ago? And then, you know, pathway to now where you're teaching it to the future of sales?
It's changed a lot. And I think it's one of the things that I actually try to share with people in this generation. If they sell as long as I have, I expect it's going to change as many times again. And there've really been a couple of big shifts over time. You know, when I first started, it was all about the relationship. You had to get the relationship first. And all the research now from, you know, maybe 15 years ago says it shifted with the internet, and the relationship comes from bringing value to the people that you're selling to. And I've wondered if I'd see another big shift in my lifetime even. And I'm convinced that AI represents what that next shift is going to be. I have no idea what it's going to be, but I think that's the one we're going to watch, we're going to learn from. And so it's turned on its head, and things that I did 30 years ago would not do very well now, and vice versa.
And so we'll save some of that sales process stuff, but let's talk about it from like the relationship standpoint. So to clarify, when you were in sales and maybe from the beginning, what were you taught about the relationship or, you know, what you were supposed to do and or approach that potential customer?
Yeah. Like, it all started with, you know, the things we still hear that maybe don't work as well as they used to: get as high as you can, as quickly as you can. If you could get to that corner office, because I was always selling in the enterprise space. And if you could get to that corner office, you were golden. And we sold licenses back then, not software as a service. And I come from a technical background, technical sales. And if you tried to do that today, well, you could do it today. But what happens is is when you get to the corner office, they'll just bounce you. They'll just say, go talk to my people because I'm going to depend on them. And they're looking for much more of a consensus. Back then, we didn't have to worry about it because the only way anyone got educated was from us. Even marketing, if you think about it, in those days, this is all pre-internet. The marketing department, it was physical product. You know, you had what we called slicks or if it was a white paper, it was a physical white paper, those kinds of things. So you didn't have very many. So when people were looking to buy, the way that they learned about the products that were available was from the salespeople. And so that means that the corner office could control all of that interaction in their organization, where today everybody can go on the internet, get their own ideas. And then you've got all of those things that you've got to pull together in order to make a sale when you're selling in the enterprise space. So it's very, very different now.
So where's that relationship change then from maybe being the one that controlled all of the education, the knowledge and that power that came with that versus now?
The way that it really changed, excuse me, was that you built trust that you were someone they were willing to be educated by. So you were in there. That was the type of relationship that you wanted to build. And that that it was that you brought them value and you were going to be someone they could rely on. And then you were allowed to teach them. Where now you just start by teaching them. It's just such a, the world is so much noisier. And so you've got to come in and you've got to quickly, and it's interesting because you establish your rapport when you teach them something they didn't know about their own space. And when you're selling, you know, people wonder how you can do that. But when we do the same thing every day and are representing the same set of products, we know that area better than they do for their company. They know their company better than we do, but we know that specific area. So the relationship is you did do things like take them to lunch a lot more, and you did it up front. And now it's almost in the little bit that I still do, and while I was still in it full time, you took them to lunch after you'd kind of gotten to a point where it looked like you were going to do business. And so that relationship building has just completely changed.
It's so interesting to think about that and really see that dynamic where it's not as much of the wining and dining and schmoozing first, right? It's part of the journey, but it's not like the initial part. Like you said, it's sometimes just to either celebrate or cement things, but not the initial part. And so how do you teach that now to the future salespeople, right? Like what are the students in your classes thinking about sales? What do they think sales is? And then, you know, where does that fit in what the mode that you're trying to teach them?
Yeah, that's a really big question, especially for my university, because a lot of our students, we've got one of the hubs of the country for door-to-door selling. Our students go out across the entire United States every summer, and they do door-to-door sales for things like pest control and solar and things like that. And to them, actually to the whole university, that's what selling is. And that's a very different sale than what we teach in our classes, because it's you knock on the door and you're trying to get a close right there with that individual. And so that's one of the areas that people come in thinking about selling. And the other one is that they come in with some of those negative connotations because of that, because of high pressure closes, all of the closing techniques. And we immediately try to suggest that's not what we're talking about. And it's not, because we're talking about more complex sales. They might only be two or three calls to get them closed. But some of them might take months or occasionally even years. And so we set that stage and say, this is a profession that you can do for your entire career. And it's dynamic enough that it will keep you interested because it's going to keep moving. So we present that. And that actually, if I can take a little bit of a segue on that, that's why I went to the university when I retired. I had no intention when I retired of teaching at the university. But I realized that I live right near three universities. You mentioned I'm with BYU, but I live near, there's also Utah Valley University. That's actually just about 8 miles from BYU. And then University of Utah is not very far away either. And so I started thinking, and I thought, I've been hiring students out of these universities for the last, I've been in Utah since 2004. I've been hiring them and they're not prepared for the type of sales we need them to be able to do. So I thought, I'm just going to reach out. Didn't know who to reach out to and just started talking to all three universities. And the first one that bit was BYU. And I just said, here's what you need to do to better prepare your students. And it's for these complex sales that they're going to face in the world. The other thing that I find is that a lot of what they were teaching had to do with becoming a sales development rep. That mm-hmm. in many students' minds, that's what selling is. And it's because it's the mm-hmm. entry level position in tech. And we have a whole lot of tech here in Utah. And so all of those things were the obstacles that we needed to overcome to show them that it's more than that. And that because look, let's be honest, if you're in an SDR position, that is a hard role. You can only do that for mm-hmm. a while. And we wanted them to see, yeah, you got to do it and you got to do it your whole career. You're not going to give up on it, but it's not going to be the only thing you do over time. And that there's so much more and there's so much more enjoyment that can come as you work with the people that you're trying to help them solve their business problems and challenges.
So how did that go when you got into the school officially and then started shifting the way that it was being taught or the way the students saw it, more than an SDR role, more than a transactional door-to-door sales? Like you said, that's really popular in that area. How did that go, and how do you teach them, especially the authenticity and the relationship building side, when you're talking a long-term thing and they're thinking sales is this and you're trying to get them to shift into this?
Yeah. You know, I just leaned into it. The nice thing is I came in and mine is a bespoke curriculum. I built my own curriculum. I came in fact, it was kind of funny because when I finally found the right person to talk to and we got, it took about 6 months to get through the process. And I think it was maybe late September, early October. And he said, "This is great. Can you start in January?" And, you know, I had an outline that I was pitching, but I didn't have a curriculum. So that first semester, I was putting it together. But first thing I do is I just lean in and I pull up some things from some research and just show that this is how people feel about salespeople in general. And you look at the statistics, and of course, most of us have sort of a negative connotation of it. And then, and here's why. And here's some research from George Akerlof that he did that won him a Nobel Prize that looked at salespeople and why we feel about them that way. And said, so, all right, that's where we're starting from. That's how people think of you. But let's show you how you can then build trust by leaning into that and saying, that's not who I am. But you have to be sensitive to the fact that that's what their preconceived notions are. And so it's actually the second lecture that I give every semester is to say, this is what people are thinking about you. So let's go from there.
I love it. And I think that's so important, right? Because it's true. That's what people think of sales. I commonly say that, you know, people view it as a dirty word. Even if we want to look at it specifically, you have sales development rep. Sometimes it's business development rep. That's a salesperson. Account executive. That's a salesperson. They don't like to call it a salesperson. They want to thinly veil over the fact that it is sales and they want to call it something else. But, you know, at its heart, it is. What do you think, like from that perspective there, there's what we think of salespeople in the negative side, but what do you think buyers are wanting now?
So what they want is someone who's willing to look at it from their perspective. It's about them. And that's one of the other things that I teach really heavily is they don't care about us. They don't care about we have quota. They don't care about how much commission we're going to make. They don't care that we're trying to get the club, any of those things. It's always about what's important to them. And I think when you talk from that standpoint, when you use words like you, again, another word from the research, right? That you talk about, can you see yourself doing this? Or what are the things that you are seeing in your organization? You always talk to them about that. And then you ask them, you know, how would you see this working with what you've described? And I think that's what they appreciate, instead of us coming in and just saying, look what I've got, look how great it is. And, you know, you need to get it because everybody else has got it. And we're the top provider in the market of that kind of a product, whatever it is, right? That dog just doesn't hunt anymore. You gotta make it about them.
All right. So you gotta make it about them. Makes sense. Obviously, I totally agree. They're totally self-centered, that buyer. They only care about themselves, and they see it from their perspective. And I love how you said they want you to see it from their perspective. Then you have that at the intersection of another human, the salesperson, who only also cares about themselves if they're not careful and is only wanting to see things from their perspective and make everyone, like you said, there's that shift. And a lot of salespeople go, well, we're great, and here's what we have, and here's what I'm going to do, and here's this. Is obviously you had a long career. Now you're dealing with students. How do you help shift that? Like, what's the way to get someone, probably you teach them one way and then they default to it and you have to shift them back. How do you get someone out of that self-centered sales mode to actually, you know, look at it from the other perspective?
That is fantastic. And I completely agree with you that you teach them and then we gravitate back to whatever it is that's natural. And it's not natural to do the things that we're talking about. You've got to practice. You've got to do it over and over mm-hmm. again. In fact, at the end of the semester, I tell my students, look, I hope you come out of this feeling like there's a different way to do it, but knowing that you don't have it all figured out yet, and that you're going to have to be conscious of this, that you're going to slip back. You're going to go into organizations. I had one of my former students come back to me during this past semester and said, I'm in an internship right now, and I'm working with sales enablement, and we're working with the salespeople. I'm sitting in on sales calls, and I'm thinking, don't do that. You're not supposed to do it that way. And then she has accepted a role to be a salesperson when she graduates. And she said, I'm so worried I'm going to fall right into what they're doing. And so I think part of it is acknowledging that, you know, when we're selling, there's so much on the table that we've got to keep in mind. And it's kind of like spinning plates, you know, the old spinning plates on the bamboo things. And yep. I think what we do in sales is we get this one going really good. And I forgot about this one. I got to come back over here and emphasize this. In fact, I'll tell you a quick anecdote. I had a friend of mine that's out in the field right now. He's got 500 salespeople reporting to him. It's a transactional sale. They close in one to three different sales calls. And he comes in at the end of every semester and he records all of his sales calls for his reps. And then they analyze them, right, with the listening tools that are out there today. And he brings in two at the end of every semester. My students listen to him and then we analyze them together. And this past time he came in, we analyzed them and there were all kinds of mistakes. And then at the end, he said, now, let me tell you, this person is in the top three in my company, and this one's in the top 10. And yes, they made all kinds of mistakes. And he said, now, one of them closed and one of them didn't. Do you know which one? And we didn't know. And in fact, it was the opposite of what we thought. Now, the reason I share that is because I think that is a great example of even when we're doing well, we're still gravitating back to that natural person, you know, of how we want to do it. And we're forgetting the good principles. So I'll stop there because I can go on a rant on this if we're not careful.
Well, I will let you rant. It's interesting because you're talking about it. We've all been there. Like I've managed and then now consulting, like listen to those calls and be like, wow, how did you miss that? Or why'd you do that? And immediately thinking of sports, right? Let's say like a football player where you watch it from the outside and be like, why did they do that? They made a mistake there. They're Hall of Fame. They could be doing amazing, right? Scoring, you know, catching a lot, scoring lots of points. Like they're doing an amazing job. But when you watch it carefully enough, you can see the mistakes. And of course, they will as well. I think the big thing is somebody open to that feedback? Do they want to get better? Are they on autopilot? And where's that margin of you know, error, margin of success? Again, it's always easier as an armchair quarterback, especially to listen to sales calls and be like, wait, why'd you do that? Which is tough. It's good, but it's also kind of unfair relative to the moment, right?
Oh, I could not agree with you more. And there's an old quote from Teddy Roosevelt about being in the arena, the man in the arena. It's not real politically correct in today's world, but it's the man in the arena. And it's, you know, they're the one with the blood and the sweat. And so don't get down on them, right? And I always start with that quote before we analyze these calls. Because it's they're in the arena, we're sitting, as you say, in our armchair. And yet, I think you made a really good point, too, of do we allow ourselves to get complacent? If I'm running in the top five in the company of a sales team of multiple hundreds of people, it could be really easy to say, no, I'm just going to keep doing it the way I'm doing it. Mm-hmm. There are several reasons that's dangerous. One is your environment could shift on you. In fact, it has over the last few years. And some of those mistakes that you got away with in the better times, you're not going to get away with when it's a little bit tougher like it is now. And so just being willing to do that and making sure, I think the key here is that we want to make sure that our students know that there are different ways to do things so that they have, at least in the back of their mind, if something's not working, they know there's a way to go find what it's out there in my notes. It's out there, wherever it is. Right. And I can go find what it is that I'm not doing and I can focus on it, get that plate spinning again, to go back to that metaphor.
So you talked about like seeing it from their perspective. The buyers want you to see it from their perspective because they care about themselves and their issues or their goals and their challenges. And then we've got the salesperson who's also human. How do you teach that, or what do you do to help people have that balance of being authentic, being who they are, but also being who the prospective customer is looking for them to be?
Yeah. So we go through, or at least in the course that I've built, we go through a certain set of tools that are out there that don't get used often, but that are used quite often by top reps, but that aren't used across the board. For example, early in the semester, we talk about what's the origin story of your product. And usually, if you've got a product that's solving problems, there's something in that story that it got created because those people were experiencing that very problem. And it's not even necessarily their customers. Often it's just them. And if you're in an early stage company, it's a founder story, right? This is why I built the company. And we try to look, and you can find that story for most products and what made it come about. And we talk about how you learn to tell that story in a way that it will relate and people will say, hey, that's exactly the problem I'm facing. And it becomes real human when it's, yeah, that's why we built it. We were facing the same problem. And so we teach them to do that. And then we talk a lot about Clayton Christensen's work on The Job to Be Done and going all the way to the, you know, most of us will do pretty well on the functional job to be done. This product exists to take care of this problem. But usually, and if you look closely at what he was trying to teach all of us, and I wish he was still here to finish what he started, but we lost him too young, is that there's a psychological aspect that's underneath. And that's the one where the obstacle usually is and where you can break through. So when you talk about seeing it from the buyer's perspective, we need to figure out what's that anxiety the buyer's got that's stopping them that has nothing to do with the product itself. It's something about the environment that you're trying to sell into. So we go through those kinds of things. I don't know how well they remember all of them at the end of the semester, but again, their thing, actually Job to Be Done, they seem to love that one. So, and the origin story, actually those two do both stick pretty well, but we do other things that don't stick as well. And I hope they're there in the back of their minds.
I love it. And that's a great segue for us to close out this part of the conversation, because both of those go into the sales process more and the persuasion piece and how do we do that. I know for people who want to connect with you, they can connect with you on LinkedIn, which is how we connected through my journey of reaching out to people. So they can find you. If they go on LinkedIn, find Greg Zippi, Z-I-P-P-I. There's also going to be a link in the show notes for a program that you have coming out soon called the Professional Selling Academy, depending on when people listen to this and find this episode. And then also we'll have a link in there, but people can find the BYU sales program, probably search that and find that as well, but we'll have that in the show notes. Greg, thank you for being here. And I will say this many times, thank you for what you're doing with the future of sales and how you're helping them see it as an authentic profession where they're actually building value. So thanks for that. And thanks for being here. And I can't wait for part two.
Well, thank you. I can't either. Let's keep going.
All right. And thank you everyone for tuning in. As always, I appreciate you being here. Kind of what Greg said when we were talking in the very beginning is this is part of the journey that I have, and he's doing it from a professional research level, which I absolutely love, but helping shift sales from being what's seen as a dirty word and a career people don't want to get into, or somebody they don't want to have to deal with if they can avoid it, into something that's a valued profession and providing value and being of service like it is supposed to be. So I appreciate you being here. And until next time, make sure to tune in for part two. But thank you for helping fill the world with authentic persuaders.